Good evening and welcome to K-Chung Radio's The Talking Show. My name is Steve Cato and it is Wednesday, the 21st of April. Happy Easter. I am here as ever with my customary co-host, Nicholas Miller.
Hey, Steve. Good to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
Yeah. Last time we were here, which unfortunately wasn't last week, I had to make a number of apologies. And now I think it might be your turn, Steve.
You're right. I am so sorry I missed last week, listeners. In solidarity with Nicholas, when we got kicked off of the team, long-term listeners will be aware that Nicholas and I used to row crew for USC, go Trojans. And when Nicholas, in sort of a, would you describe it as like a folly, or would you describe it more as like an ecstasy? Nicholas took all the coronavirus vaccines, by which I mean not physically all of the available vaccine doses, but one of each.
Yeah.
And he became quite ill.
I would just call it thorough.
All right. So that's zeal, I guess. That's not an ecstasy or a folly. That's zeal, right?
Yeah.
In a desire to leave no stone unturned, Nicholas got the Pfizer, the Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, and
I'm still on the wait list for AstraZeneca. Yeah, that one's stuck.
It's rare.
It got stuck in the canal.
And then I believe Nicholas is also trying through back channels to get access to some of the, what's it called? Soberana, the Cuban vaccine. The two Sinovac vaccines from China, and Sputnik V.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're just waiting till those Dogecoins are converted until the unmarked freezer package comes to us from our friends in Ukraine. But anyway, so 2 weeks ago, Nicholas got thrown, or 3 weeks ago now, Nicholas got thrown off of the team because he had gotten too ill as a side effect of multiple COVID vaccinations simultaneously. We had been thrown off the team last week. And when news of us getting thrown off of the team the week before last came out, the whole team went out and got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as well as the Moderna vaccine.
In solidarity
with Nicholas and I, which felt great and has definitely put the institution of rowing at USC in a tricky spot. So we might yet get our spots back. Who knows?
I haven't really discussed this with you too carefully, Steve, but we may not need to because there's talks of starting our own rowing league.
A super league.
Yeah, it would be called a American Super League. We would only take rowing teams from the elite universities of the United States, and those teams would get an enormous cash infusion by joining the Super League, and therefore we would effectively protect our already existing prestige in perpetuity by creating a system in which no one else can enter. Period.
Mm.
There'll be a few slots at the bottom that, you know, like the plebes can fight for. But for the most part,
right,
it'll, you know, we'll row against Harvard and Yale and Princeton like we usually do and beat Stanford because, you know,
if we are allowed back on the team.
We don't need to be allowed. We just start our own thing.
But we're not at USC anymore.
It's true. It doesn't matter. We'll just we'll call ourselves USC, but it'll be a different acronym. It'll stand for something, not University of Southern California.
Ah,
yeah,
right.
United Southern Crew or something. I don't.
I can't see what could go wrong.
Nothing. I think it's foolproof. It's foolproof.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
Basically, all of the rowing fans of Los Angeles would have to protest for it to even be a tiny, tiny little mark in the armor of this idea.
What happens if government gets involved?
Garcetti?
You know, like, what if Garcetti, for example, is like, this is a blow at the core of amateur sport. This is a move of raw greed. You know, how dare USC do this?
Don't you think that would be pretty hypocritical coming from someone like Garcetti?
Well, sure. But I don't know if that's ever stopped him.
It's true. It's true. Perhaps he'll he'll take our side.
Right, right. Oh, maybe that'll be the case. again, I can't think of a time when this wouldn't have worked. So, yeah. What do you think will happen?
If we lived in a place that had a much longer ties to local sports and had many echelons in which those sports exist, in which the different layers and different tiers were tied to different forms of fandom and camaraderie, then perhaps there'd be some resistance. But I can't see anyone caring that much about rowing down here in Southern California.
So do you think audience figures will be huge for the Super League?
Audience figures?
Yeah.
I mean, no more than the kind of scattering of moms and dads that we have now.
Nicholas, I'm offended. Rowing is the most popular sport in Southern California. Everyone from all over town, from the Tony West side to the barrio, everyone supports crew, man.
Yeah.
Come on. They line the canals when we row.
Right. Well,
who are you kidding? We're the soul of this town. They call it Crew Town for a reason.
For those listeners that aren't picking up on these subtle undertones, we've created a kind of parody about the European Super League, which is the latest update, the latest news in European soccer.
And Prime Minister Boris Johnson came out and made a principled stand against the greed of the football teams that would join the European Super League, which is incredible because at no point in Johnson's life has he ever stood against greed so conclusively. So it's astonishing to everyone.
Well, perhaps he's turned a new leaf.
Oh, that's true. Who knows?
Yeah, after he got the novel coronavirus, perhaps he's now
the fifth time
against greed.
So as someone who has no doubt been using the return of football in Europe to sort of get them through this unending pandemic, what's your personal take on the European Super League?
Well, I think that, you know, it was surprising to me that the major clubs who already, you know, their books are loaded with debt, and it just seems like the kind of thing that they're not going to assess until there's a sale, and so it's not a real debt. But lately,
right?
That debt's been mounting, just insurmountable, you know, continuing to make these enormous salary payments each month to the players and all of the upkeep of the staff and the fields and whatnot, with zero fans coming to the games, only television rights, which are not insignificant. So it seemed like a move to try to extinguish that debt. So the European Super League promised all of the founding teams 3 billion euro as a joining bonus, which would squash their debt and allow them to accrue even more high profile players. The European Super League also was going to remove there's a really complicated and convoluted salary cap for European soccer clubs, depending on which league. It makes zero sense, and people are constantly breaking it and having to go to court and then never seem to be punished. So I don't know what that really means, but they were going to at least lift that, so there's no question as to how much you could spend. You know, you could have Messi and Ronaldo on your team, whereas teams can't do that currently because there's just
Afford to have both. Yeah.
Well, they can afford it. They can find the cap.
Yeah,
they can find the cash. It's just they would get in trouble. So no one wants to test that rule. I think it was an attempt to get out of debt. Also, like the way that the European soccer is structured now for the really wealthy clubs is you not only have to have a first string of extremely expensive elite players, but you basically have a whole secondary squad, because they're usually like in England, they play their league matches. There are 38 of those. So they happen every weekend. And then there are two domestic tournaments they play in, the FA Cup. And I'm losing the name of the other one. So those games are sprinkled throughout. And then if you're an elite team, you play in the Champions League, where you're playing the best teams from all the other leagues in Europe. And those games take place on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. So you're playing, these players are playing like an inhuman amount of soccer, so they invariably get injured, and so you have to have an entire like elite secondary squad to come in and replace it. So oftentimes the teams that win the Champions League, because it's at the very end of the whole thing, and it's very
deepest bench.
They just have the deepest bench, and when the salary cap really makes it hard to have a deep bench. So I think that they were just trying to turn it into like the NBA, where you just have as many players as you want that are great and spend as much money as you want. The people protested and all the teams left the Super League. But then the Champions League, as part of this deal, the Champions League upped their stake in the tournament by 7 billion euro.
Huh.
So basically, like, you know, the money is going to trickle back to those elite clubs. And not the same effect as an exclusive Super League, but basically the 15 richest teams are going to get richer. Because, you know, the Champions League is like, there's always like one David and Goliath story of this, you know, 36 teams that play in the tournament that are invited to play in the tournament.
But like Leicester City or something like that.
Yeah. Or like Slavia Prague or you know, something like this. We'll make it like further than anyone expected. But by the time you get to the last eight, it's like household names, you know, every year.
Barcelona.
Yeah, Barcelona, Real Madrid. Oh, what is it right now? It's like Manchester City, Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain, and
Munich.
They got knocked out last round, but they did win it last year. And when you win it, you win something like 250 million euro. So
I heard Saint-Germain didn't refuse to participate.
They did refuse. They refused. That was surprising. They seem like the most money-grubbing club in all of Europe, and they stayed out of it. I don't exactly know why. They're probably going to win the Champions League this year, so maybe that's why. I have no idea. I wasn't surprised. You know, my favorite club is Liverpool, and they were, you know, first in line, I think. But they were acquired a number of years ago by FSG, Fenway Sports Group, who owned the Boston Red Sox. So they have like a very, very American approach to managing that team. And they like, even though the team's done rather well, they're not like, there's a kind of like, I would call it, you know, like, uneconomical passion about funding soccer clubs in Europe. So like oftentimes people like Real Madrid will be like in tons of debt and they want to buy another player. And the owners just like plunge enormous amounts of money in for no good reason. Whereas Liverpool pretty consistently returns a profit every year, which is rare, you know, rare. And there are a couple clubs like Dortmund in Germany and Ajax in Amsterdam who have a long reputation of signing very young players and having a great academy and building up a great team and then selling them for huge profits. So like they, which means they never get, they usually very rarely get that far in the big tournaments because their
players are too green.
Well, and also just like they build a great team, like no one's older than 23, and they get like, say, the quarterfinals in the Champions League, and then like eight of the players get purchased like right after the tournament. So they just get kind of, but that's their model, is they raise players and they're okay letting go of them. But yeah, so I mean, it's just in the end, it was kind of interesting to see these protests succeed against this form of consolidating power and monopolizing the prestige of those teams. But it's not like the little guy wins here.
It's not like soccer's not fundamentally corrupt or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not like, because it was like the European Super League seemed like a bad group of people, but then FIFA's not great who they're fighting against.
No, of course not.
Or yeah. UEFA, the European, version right. of FIFA. You're like, okay, well,
that's goblins all around.
Exactly. Yeah. Lesser evils, I guess.
Well, to move entirely away from evil, we have a guest on who really enjoys the simple things, the pleasures you can experience just as a living organism, maintaining, let's say, a decent amount of warmth or coolness, for example, enjoying the outdoors in a way that is reasonable and comfortable, or perhaps traveling and carrying more than one backpack in a way that is like less arduous than trying to stack two backpacks on your back. So please welcome the mysterious but endearingly named Digital Friend.
So often when people are walking around or traveling, they don't have two backpacks, and it's hard to have two backpacks on your back. So this is one way that you can do it. Looks a little unusual, but it does work. So you can put the backpack on the front and a backpack on the back. You can take them off really fast, and you can switch them around, and you can get into the backpacks. And that's kind of nice, say if you're a photographer or if you're someone else. Say you're a traveler and you need to get at stuff. This is how I converted my 2007 Honda Fit Sport into a camper. These ideas would probably work on newer models as well. It's important that the front seat folds back so that you have lots of space inside. This is a very simple conversion, and it is pretty easy to do. There's a tarp on top of the car, which gives some privacy, and it also keeps the rain out of the windows. It's important that there's an air gap between the tarp and the window so you get good ventilation inside, and it's usually a good idea to set up the car in a shady area, say under a tree, so that it doesn't get too hot if there's lots of sun or if it's during the summertime. So you can see I have lots of lines going off of the tarp to pegs, and the tarp is securely pegged. And inside, it's kind of like a teardrop trailer. This is a compact car, so it's quite small, but there's a lot of room inside. The Sport model has the fold back seats. Here are some slightly different tarp configurations. In this case, I haven't tied off all of the lines. I've let some of them droop down, which works in this case because I'm in an area where there isn't much wind. I'm in a forest, and I park my car in the shade so that when the sun beats down on the car, it won't get too hot inside. This is during the summertime. And you can see, in some cases, I've tied the ropes off on trees instead of using pegs, and there's some advantage to doing this because you can get the tarp a bit higher, which makes it easier to open the doors, the front doors of the car, and it's easier to get in and out. And it works quite well. It was rainy, but I was very dry inside and quite comfortable. And there's a lot of gap between the tarp and the window to ensure that I have good ventilation inside. You can see here I tied off on a tree, and that results in a higher tarp. Use whatever tie-off points you have available. This is a really nice campsite when it's dry, but when it rains, the water sometimes comes down the hill, and if you're in a tent, you might get wet. I'm in a car, so I stay dry. And I make sure to park underneath a tree so that the car doesn't get too hot in the summer from the sun. The sun can make it really hot. Camping in a shady area is a good idea. These are the boards. They're painted plywood boards which have been cut out to fit over the mattress. As you can see, it doesn't have to be an exact fit. The general idea is that the boards go over the mattress to protect the mattress from getting dirty, and then you put your gear on top of the boards and the front seats fold up. It's kind of like having a little van. There's a lot of cargo space in this car when the front seats are folded up. This configuration fits two people and a lot of gear. When the front and rear seats are both folded down and a mattress is installed, this car has as much room as a small teardrop trailer. Two tall people can comfortably sleep in this car, stretched out. The car has a roof and windows, and I installed a screen. It also has a mattress, and it's on wheels, so it keeps you off of the ground. It's kind of like a trailer. It's a great sleeping area. You can sleep without the tarp on, and then you can see out of the windows and see the stars. It's quite pretty. So the mattress can be cut with a bread knife. It's firm upholstery foam, which you can get from an upholstery store. And it has to be measured out, but you don't have to cut around the wheel wells because the foam will simply compress and squish around the wheel wells. Then you can put a sheet over top and some sleeping bags or whatever sleeping arrangement you like. It's quite comfortable to sleep in this car. Now I'm going into the car from the passenger side, and you can store your gear on the dashboard underneath the windshield. And you can see the foam of the mattress has to be about as high as the seats when they're folded down, so that you have a nice even sleeping arrangement. See, it's about as high as the seats are when it's folded. You can see the foam compressed around the wheel wells. The mattress is just squished into place. It's not fastened down. This mattress is firm foam, and it is measured so that when the front seat is folded back, the mattress squishes into the seat a little bit, and the foam is a little bit higher than the seat when it's folded down. And I sewed a cover over top of the mattress and put a sheet over top of it. It's kind of like a bed, and it's quite comfortable. If the foam is too soft, you might squish down too far. You can make this measurement yourself and then buy the foam from a store or online. These measurements don't have to be highly precise because the foam will squish. I use some of the extra foam to make a footrest, which makes sleeping even more comfortable, especially if you have long legs. When the door is open, it can support the tarp and raise the tarp up a little bit, making it easier to get in or out of the car. Then you don't have to bend down. You can see here the door is supporting the tarp. And I'm going out of the car now, and you can see there's a big air gap here. The windows are down and there's lots of ventilation. There's a big air gap between the tarp and the window. This is how I close the door. I put my hand over top of the rubber seal on the top edge of the door, and then I slowly close it. This stops the rubber from sticking to the tarp. And then move your hand out of the way. This is a small detail, but if you're opening and closing the door hundreds of times, it gets rid of a small aggravation. I store my flip-flops underneath the car so that when it rains, they're still dry. And then when I get out of the car, the flip-flops or shoes are right there, very available. The valuables and clothes get stored on the dashboard underneath the windshield. This is the screen. The screen is important because it keeps the bugs out. So the window is rolled fully down and then the screen is installed. I use fiberglass screen. It's kind of like cloth and you can get it from a hardware store. I don't use the metal screen, which is too stiff. You want the fiberglass screen. It's quite inexpensive. So the trick is how to get the screen to stick on the car. And I used magnets. I used 18 millimeter strong magnets. They're not rare earth magnets, which I think are too strong. So there's a part of the door where there's plastic, and for this part you need electrical tape. So I used a lot of magnets, as you can see. I might have used too many, but the idea is you have to have a tight seal so the mosquitoes can't get in. Mosquitoes can get through tiny little cracks, so you don't want to leave any little spot for them to get through, because they make your sleeping quite miserable. So here on the side there's of the car door, it's plastic, so magnets won't work, so I use electrical tape. You should cut the electrical tape with scissors to stop it from shrinking back and wrecking your seal. So you can check it carefully to make sure no mosquitoes get in. The magnet has to be strong enough that if you open and close the door, that the magnets don't fall off. So these are quite strong magnets. I tried coating them with glow-in-the-dark paint. It didn't quite work, but the idea is that you can set up in the dark without a flashlight. Maybe someone can get it to work. So this is what it looks like, and you can see they come off and they can be reattached very easily. Installing the screen takes the most time of all the setup procedures, but with the magnets you can take the magnets off quite quickly. Sometimes the polarity is different, so you have to flip the magnets around. You'll see. So there, I have to flip it around, and I just store the magnets on top of the car when I'm cleaning up, and I put them in a plastic bag. The tarp needs a hole for the antenna. I cut a hole in the tarp using a pair of scissors and then patched the edges of the hole using sheathing tape. Lay out the tarp on top of the car and find out where you want the hole to be. This tarp is now ready to be folded up. I've started rolling up the tarp, starting from one side and then moving to the other side. You can see the ropes have already been coiled and taped with electrical tape, and there's only a little bit of line left over. This is done to prevent all the ropes from tangling. If they're coiled up this way, it's much easier to roll up the tarp and then to redeploy the tarp later on. The idea is to roll up the tarp almost in the same way that a sail is rolled up. Just keep rolling it and it gets long and thin. This makes it even easier to turn the tarp into a neat compact bundle, which can be easily reopened at the next camping site. Now that I've rolled up both sides and rolled up the ropes into the tarp, it's time to roll up the whole tarp into a tight bundle. And you can see how I've just folded it up or rolled it up until I reach the antenna. I store the tarp in a plastic container. This makes it very convenient to store it at home and also in the car. See, it's nicely rolled up, and there's a rope around the tarp. When I take the tarp out, you can see it's very tightly rolled and it's neat, and the pegs, the magnets, the screen, and the gear tarp are all inside. Now I take the rope off the outside, the rope that ties everything together, that ties the package together, and now I put the tarp on top of the car and I roll out the tarp. You can see the hole with for the antenna is near the top of the roll. This is important so that your tarp is properly positioned when it has been unfolded and unrolled. You can see now I'm getting to the end of the roll, and this is where the magnets, the screen, and the pegs are located, as well as the gear tarp. There's the magnets, there's the pegs, and you can see the screen. Now I have to reposition the hole on top of the antenna. Here's the hole, and the tarp has to be slid over the antenna. Be careful not to scratch your car, and be careful not to wreck your antenna. The hole goes right over the antenna. Perfect. Now it's time to unroll the tarp even further, just as though you're unrolling a sail. And you can see it unrolls, and there are the ropes. They're nicely coiled and they are not tangled. This is very quick to do, especially if you have two people doing it at the same time, unrolling the tarp simultaneously. Now the tarp is covering one side of the car. I'm going to finish unrolling the tarp, and it's unrolled on one side of the car. There are the ropes. Now I go to the other side of the car and I unroll the tarp on that side of the car. Everything is nice and neat, and it's very quick to unroll the tarp, and none of the ropes are tangled. There, I just straighten out the tarp a little bit, unroll the last parts of the tarp, and in this case I chose to have the green side on top. The gear tarp is also on top of the car tarp, and now I will reposition the hole for the antenna so it's properly positioned. I just move the tarp a little bit, and I pull the gear tarp off. Now it's time to do the whole procedure in reverse. Now we're folding up the tarp. So I'm going to roll up the tarp again, and I'm going to roll the coiled rope, which has been secured with electrical tape, into the tarp roll. So I flip it in, and then I just roll the tarp up. And this keeps the rope from being tangled and keeps everything organized so you can quickly deploy the tarp again at the next stop. So now the tarp has been rolled on both sides. See, in this case, I did it very neatly. And now I put the pegs and the magnets and the screen and the equipment tarp on top of the roll, and I just fold everything together, or roll it up together. You can see I'm going to roll the tarp right up until I reach the antenna, then I'm going to move the tarp away from the antenna and keep rolling. This avoids damaging the antenna. Now everything is nicely contained in a big tent roll, and the tarp can easily be redeployed next time. I put it back in the plastic container, and I'm ready to go again. Once the trip is over, dry out the tarp before storing. Now we move on to the subject of the air gap. This is the space or gap between the tarp and the car. It's necessary for ventilation. You need this air gap so that you get good ventilation inside the car. And the windows have to be rolled down so that you get good ventilation. This air gap allows lots of fresh air to flow into the car. This gives you lots of oxygen. I make sure the windows are rolled down as far as possible. When the wind blows, the tarp sometimes flops around, the tarp can either be tied down tightly or loosely. If there's a lot of wind, the ropes need to be tensioned and the tarp needs to be tied down tightly. If there's less wind, you can leave the ropes a tiny bit slack. The rope needs to be a little bit slack on the exit door so that you can open the door. Otherwise, it's a bit difficult to open the door without tearing the rubber seal. If there is too much wind and the pegs don't hold, the tarp needs to be taken down. This tarp acts almost like an overhang porch, or it looks like the underside of an umbrella. There's a nice air gap. I have lots of pegs holding down this tarp. Before you leave, make sure that all the pegs have been removed from the front of your car so you don't drive over a peg and get a punctured tire. You can see there's quite a bit of an air gap from this angle. The mirror provides a small emergency air gap if the ropes fail and the windows are rolled fully down, but this is not enough ventilation and it is not an ideal circumstance. Make sure there's always an air gap. Those insects will not get through this screen and bother me when I'm sleeping. I use 2 half hitches to attach the rope to the tarp. You can look up different knot options on the internet. I prefer to use big strong pegs. I loop the rope over the peg and then I pull it tight. This is a taut line hitch. You can look up this knot or other adjustable loops on the internet. This allows me to easily adjust the tension. This knot does well in low wind conditions, but it doesn't do very well under high wind conditions where the tarp is flopping around a lot. Another option is a couple of half hitches around the peg. You need to learn a little bit of knot skill to optimize this tarp. The door rope is tied a little bit looser. The pegs are pounded into the ground on an angle and the rope is attached to the bottom of the peg. This makes the connection stronger. Here I'm using a taut line hitch to adjust the tension of the rope. Now it's time to take down the tarp. I've loosened the ropes and now I pull out the tent pegs, just wiggle them back and forth a little bit and they should come out quite easily. Make sure you remove the pegs from the front of the car so you don't drive over them by accident and get a tire puncture. Keep removing the pegs. Now I'm coiling the rope like this in a small coil. And I take some electrical tape and I wrap around the rope once or twice. And then I rip the tape and I fold the tape back like that. This ensures that the ropes don't tangle and they're easy to deploy the next time I need them. Here I've attached the tarp lines to a picnic table to get a higher angle. This means it's easier to open the door. These lines are attached to a picnic table or to a tree. Use whatever tie-off points you have available. This can give you a higher angle on your tarp, which can sometimes be an advantage. And I just throw the tarp right over the line, and I can throw the boards on top of the tarp to hold the tarp down when there's wind. Now I pull up the tent pegs and I'm ready to move. Here's a good way to set up the gear tarp. I have a rope between 2 trees and then I put the tarp over top and I peg it down in the front and tie it off on trees on the back. There's an angle on the back of the tarp and the other tarp goes over the gear and the boards go on top of the gear. This is what the corners look like. You can see it's a close-up, and this is what it looks like from underneath. It's quite simple and it works. Tarps are quite compact and they're very versatile if you know how to use them. This was quite a rainy night and I was probably much drier sleeping in my car than I would have been sleeping in a tent. You can see the mud splashed up on the tires. Tarps are very waterproof and they don't let in any rain. This is a nice, comfortable way to go camping in the rain. This technique worked quite well for me. Thanks for watching, enjoy your trip, and have a great day.
Wow. Those are good tips.
That was some wholesome talking right there.
Yeah. Compared to the sins of both USC crew and Major League Soccer. Wow. It was just nice to know that you can put a tarp over your Honda Fit and make your sleeping situation much more reasonable.
Yeah, and counterbalance those backpacks.
That's incredible.
I got to send him his talking to my father. My father has recently got into those kind of, you know, like cantilevered unicycle backpacks that make you look like a slug.
Yeah.
Yeah, he and my uncle took a long hike a few weeks ago, both wearing those.
Did they enjoy it? What did they carry?
I think just, you know, tents and food and stuff. It was like
Oh, so they like hiked. When you say a long hike, you mean, yeah, a multi-day hike. I see.
Yeah.
Continue. Sorry.
I think it's really easy on the back, but I haven't gotten the debriefing yet. But I imagine, you know, 2 60-something-year-old men who look like slugs walking around the desert probably get stopped a lot more than he'd like.
Well, and I imagine it's also hard to just play areas where that's like less comfortable too, right? Where if you have to, or like on a narrower path or something, that the two of you have to like be pretty far apart. And what if your tail catches on something, or or you're making a particularly tight corner, for example.
And you probably, if you're leading, you probably kick up a good deal of dirt onto your hiking buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I could. Well, I'm curious to hear how that debriefing goes. I've been monitoring the situation surrounding the man centaur wheeled backpack scene, and I'm curious to learn of any results. So next week, listeners, hopefully we will have some news on that front to report.
Yeah, I'll have to check in with Storm and Norman and see how his slug hike went, his tandem slug hike.
I'm very curious. And you know, but again, Digital Friend has the answer. You know, maybe you just put one backpack on the front and one backpack on the back.
Yeah, true.
And it's pretty easy to switch them up.
No, yeah, and I mean, he's got quite a method there. But it seems like, you know, this is a lacking form of thought in our culture, is just method in general, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah.
Like you come, it's rare you come across someone who's just so good at methodological problems. Way to go.
Yeah. Airflow? Key. Key to sleeping in your car in comfort.
Cross breeze, yeah.
It's so important.
You like it at home, you'll like it in the car camping too.
You will love it inside your Honda Fit. Yeah, Meredith and I are happy owners of a 2016 Honda Fit, and it's a great car. It's an economical car, and you know, this is the kind of information that really helps you to get out and enjoy all that the state of California has to offer. You know, these key tarp insights. You know, it's not pretty, it doesn't look pretty, but you get the airflow going, it's just sensational. Screens keep the bugs out.
Yeah, you know, and in the wake of this European Super League disaster, it's important to enjoy the simple comforts of being a human organism.
Yeah, not being too hot, not being too cold, good breeze, good airflow,
right?
Reasonable amounts of strain on the back.
Not necessarily dominating every human and thing in your path.
Yeah.
Just, you know, try to achieve some level of homeostasis with your environment.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks, Digital Friend. And thanks to you, our radio friends, for tuning in to another installment of Kaecheng Radio's The Talking Show. Kaecheng Radio is primarily sports-based talking radio show. Good night, everyone.
Good morning, Chinatown.